Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here this week and we are going to talk all about science!
Science!
I was waiting for you to do that. Awesome. We are here with Dr. Scott, with Lucas, and me and Mike, and we are going to chat all about the world of science. And it almost seems like every day there's new scientific discoveries and scientific advancements that are bettering humanity. And we're going to talk all about it and go into the exploration. We're boldly go where no one's gone before. Oh, wait, that's a different show. Sorry. We're going to talk all about science. It's going to be fun. And to help me talk all about it, let's welcome my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Science! Oh, I mean, sorry. Howdy!
How are you, my friend?
I'm fine. It's actually really fun. I'm glad we're doing this again because, yeah, this is going to be a regular thing where we talk about, you know, some of the latest, greatest, exciting things that are happening science-wise. And I am glad to help, you know, spread the word onto the many, many cool things that are happening these days.
It is, and it's just interesting to see how much is changing around us. You know, if you think about, look at the last 10 years, even how much technology has changed.
Well, technology and just discoveries, you know. I mean, heck, I mean, I think it just came out recently that we might have another moon around us, you know, orbiting us. That's amazing.
That's not a moon, my friend. It's a space station.
Well, maybe. You never know these days. But, you know, so it's really awesome. And you know what? I can't think of two better guys to talk about it with. I mean, Dr. Geek, of course. You know, I mean, he as far as Earth Station's one concern, he's what keeps the station in orbit. You know, I mean, God knows we don't know what these buttons and flashes do.
I know. We barely are able to get JD out for walking every once in a while from the airlock.
I mean, I know. I mean, it's all we can do. Just hit the record button.
Well. Yeah. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to be a podcaster. Come on.
Yeah. And Lucas is just on it as well. So definitely it's going to be fun. But yes, of course, before we do that.
Of course, we got to take care of regular business. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store, where you can find all kinds of cool stuff, including, you know, Mary Ogle and her business partner have written a great new book. We call Tweets from the Dog, and Judy's already ordered 50 copies of it.
One for each dog.
Exactly. Hey.
Yeah, you're getting in there, my friend.
Don't go there, dude. You're the one with all the pets. Come on.
But no, I'm excited for Mary, and I definitely encourage people to check it out. And I even encourage people more so to get it through the Amazon store, because that helps us out a lot.
Exactly.
It helps Mary out, and it helps us out.
It helps us all out.
So if you're a fan of ESW, if you're a fan of ESO, that's the way to go.
Exactly. So please help us out, help them out. And, you know, every little bit helps. You can get to the ESO Amazon store by just going to ESOpodcast.com, go to the right side of the page, and there's a nice little Amazon bumper right there on the side. Check it out. And you know what? There's lots of cool stuff about past shows. Even the holiday gift guide stuff is still up there. So you never know what could else be up there. Tons and tons of cool stuff. We want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or you call us at 404-963-9057. All right, let's get started with this week's rants and raves. Mr. Mike, what do you got to tell us?
Well, first and foremost, I have to issue out an apology. A couple of weeks ago, we had the pleasure of putting a victim in the geek seat, and this one got away from us. Unfortunately, there were technical difficulties, and we were not able to salvage the recording. But I did want to make sure we're going to try to regroup and interview Matthew W. Quinn again. But in the meantime, I wanted to let everybody know that Matthew's got some exciting stuff, man. He's written a couple books. He is a regular contributor to another show on the network, Myopia, Defend Your Childhood. So if you listen to that show, you're probably already familiar with Matthew's work. But he's written a couple of novels, and he's also written the short story called I Am the Wendigo that is now available as an audiobook. And I've listened to this. It's pretty exciting. It's pretty creepy. It's a horror story for sure. So if you like that sort of thing, I definitely encourage people to check it out. It's available on Audible, which is an Amazon company, so you can actually go through the Amazon eStore to get it, and it's not very expensive. So because it's a short story, but it's really well done. I think it's about 15 minutes or so. So you can listen to it and get creeped out and then try to go to bed. It's really cool. And like I said, Matthew did a great job on it. And, you know, we definitely are looking forward to, you know, the Geek Seat doesn't like victims to just escape like that. So there will be a reckoning, Matthew. There will be a reckoning. You will be back in the Geek Seat. I guarantee it. But it's only a matter of time, my friend. You can't escape the clutches that easily. But
you know, this time we're also going to make sure he doesn't bring the knife to cut out of the bonds.
Well, you know, we've had to do some configuring, so there's no Geek Seat this week. So in preparation next week, we've already got our victim selected. The straps are double secured. So this guy's not getting away. This victim, you know, we're set, man, because look, if we make the Geek Seat angry, and I can't even imagine it, 2 weeks in a row, it's going to be so hungry. I feel sorry. I feel sorry for the victim, really.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
But anyway, you know, Matthew, if you're listening, apologize tremendously. Again, we will try to get you back on and reschedule you. But I do encourage people to go check out your work. We'll have links on our show notes to where you can go check out his blog as well as the audiobook and whatnot. So check out Matthew and check out Myopia, Defend Your Childhood, because it's another show on our network. So
perfect. Sounds great.
So another thing I wanted to talk about, because, you know, it's getting to be Oscar season. And I know a lot of people are focusing on the movies that are coming out. I think we talked last time about, you know, all the movies that are up for awards this year. But one thing I really like about this time of year, more so than get excited for the new movies, is I'm a big fan. Two times. There are two times where I'm a huge fan of Turner Classic Movies. And one is Halloween, because in October, they play all the good stuff. They play the Hammer movies. They play the Universal movies. They run the gambit of horror movies big time. And then also in on January and February, they do 31 Days of Oscars. And so they play a lot of the movies that are in their library that at one point, you know, were nominated for Oscars. And in some cases won, some cases they didn't, but still are worthy of note in the fact that they were nominated. And so you get these, you know, every time I turn it on Turner Classic Movies this time of year, every day there's a movie that I'm like, oh, I'm stuck watching this now, because it's either one that I've seen, because, and it's a classic movie like Outlaw Josie Wales, like Jaws, or it's something that I hadn't seen before that I've always wanted to see. I watched a movie with William Powell and Jean Harlow and Myrna Loy a little while ago, and I'm trying to remember the name of it now. I think it's called The Libel Woman or something like that. But anyway, it was a really fun movie, and I wish I could remember the name of it now. But I'd never seen it before. Big William Powell, Myrna Loy fan from the Thin Man movies. They've done 14 movies, and I think I've only seen about half of them. So, but it's a great time for classic movies. So, you know, watching TCM, getting, you know, all excited about the sort of history of movies. And I know, Mike, that you've taken a lot of courses in movies, just as I have. And classic movies still must really resonate with you. What sort of movies do you think of when you think of, like, classic Oscar-winning movies? Is there anything that you, like, automatically you're like, that is the epitome of an Oscar-winning movie?
Well, definitely you have to look at different movies, because you look at something like the Ten Commandments, or you even go further back. You know, I had studied animation in school along with film. And, you know, of course, you think of, for me, I think of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, which got its own special Academy Award. They made these little tiny dwarf Oscars for that award, because it was so groundbreaking.
Oh, exactly. But you also then think of stuff, you know, think of Casablanca. You think of, you know, when you think of Oscar time, you think of the classics. You think of, you know, some of these just truly amazing films. You know, you think of, you know, movies that, you know, growing up, you know, these were, you know, always on for us, you know, regular TV, but it was the afternoon movies and such.
It's movies that I didn't have to go that far out of my way, because it seems like they've always been available. But, you know, you think of, to me, it's like actors like Jimmy Stewart, like Cary Grant, like Lauren Bacall, like Katherine Hepburn, like Spencer Tracy, mm-hmm.
You think of movies like Breakfast at Tiffany's or something like that,
which is a movie, you know what, I still haven't seen all the way through, which is really like a shame. Yeah. It's one of those ones that I have to see, you know, but I just haven't got around to it yet. So it's one of those ones that, yeah. I watched Network again the other night. I got caught in that because, you know what, that movie is as scary now as it was back in, like, what, 70 something when it came out? 75, 74, something like that. You know, when they're talking about, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I mean, that could be, that scene could be relevant today. And then the scene, the really famous scene where I'm trying to think of the actor's name, Ned Beatty, I think, confronts the guy, and he's talking about how the world is not made up of countries. It's made up of companies, and how this is the new world order now. And it's the way it really, it's always been. And it's just, I'm like, this might as well be like airing now. There's something about a lot of these movies that, and it doesn't matter whether they win the award or not, because, you know, there's several movies out there that haven't won Oscars that we all love. I mean, my favorite movies out there weren't Best Picture winners. But there's something about them that gives them that status that they earn, where you can watch them at any point in time and they still seem relevant.
Oh yeah. Watch something like One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Excellent example. Yes.
Or you look at something like The Deer Hunter, or, you know, you look at something like The Godfather.
Right.
You go through all of these and they are just amazing. You know, it's just some of these, you know, like I said, I had mentioned Casablanca earlier, but then you also had The Bridge Over River Kwai.
Yep.
You know, yes. You know, movies that, you know, just are just so amazing from here to eternity, or The French Connection. You just have all these different movies that are just like, now they're mainstays, but in their day they were groundbreaking.
Yeah. And look, I'm certainly not opening this up to an argument where about they don't make them like that anymore, because really, you know, movies change. I mean, if you look at the best movies from the 70s or the 80s or the 40s or the 50s, they're all different. I mean, it's a different style. There's a different language. I mean, when you watch movies, when you watch Casablanca, you know, I mean, obviously it was made for its time. But yet there's something about it that still speaks and resonates to folks now. But yet it's an entirely different movie than, say, French Connection, which is a movie that I think could only have been made in the 70s. You know, oh, yeah. I mean, that's just a wild movie. But, you know, if they were to make it today, it would be something, you know, more like Fast and Furious or something. It would just be really crazy.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you have something this year like La La Land going for Best Picture, and you had in 1965, you had The Sound of Music.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do get the occasional, you know, lighter movies too. It's not all the time, you know, something, no, you know, heavy.
And I'm very glad to see that, you know, musicals have wormed their way back into being a genre that that people still go to. I mean, for a while there, I think we thought that, you know, especially after something like Xanadu, that they were just dead, you know, that that nobody would do musicals anymore because it just nobody wanted to see them anymore. But
hey, hold on, hold on, Mike, hold on. I do hear cheering from Bobby Nash in the background.
I know you. I think he was spearheading that. But no, I'm really happy because I have always liked enjoyed a good musical. And I've been watching several of them, watching Turner Classic Movies, you know, watching Gene Kelly and. And Fred Astaire and Judy Garland and just magical moments. I know that Hollywood and the studio system, I know everything that's wrong with it. I mean, we can talk endlessly about, you know, the crap that is produced there and has been since the beginning. But that doesn't, you know, negate the fact that some real magic has come out of that system. And it's really nice to see it all on display. And that's one of the reasons why I love Turner Classic Movies, especially this time of year, because every time you turn to it, it's an award winner.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I can name off the top of my head, you know, and these are even more recent classics. You know, you had movies like Schindler's List or Unforgiven or even Silence of the Lambs, you know, which is almost in our genre right there. But it's interesting because you never really had a true sci-fi movie win Best Picture.
No, I don't think that's happened. I mean, did 2001 win?
No.
Okay, I can't remember if that was Best Picture or not. But I mean, that was, and that's a whole different thing too. I mean, I recently heard one of our ESO companions, our ESO brothers, so to speak, Van Allen Plexico did a show on 2001 and 2014. In which he mentioned that, you know, 2001, that's when movies were an event. You know, they weren't so much you didn't go to be sort of entertained for a story. It was an event.
Right.
And that certainly was the case for 2001 and the case for a lot of those movies, too.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And it's interesting because, you know, it used to be you went to the movies to see events. You had Lawrence of Arabia. You had, you know, movies like that where they were so wide, you know, scoping. It was just amazing. And I do stand corrected. We did have a genre movie when Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you even had that. And it's just amazing when you think about it that, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of movie you're going to go see, you're there for the magic and you're going to capture it. And hopefully the, you know, studios will capture and the people who vote for it, hopefully will find the same magic that you found with it.
Yeah. I've always been, I think from a very early age, I've always been an avid movie buff. I've been a cinephile. I've definitely wanted to be, you know, part of the industry. I've wanted to help make magic. You know, in college, I was a screen studies major. You know, movies have been a big part of my life. And when I see a lot of these examples on Turner Classic Movies, I'm reminded as to why, because they're just so special. I mean, when I see Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant on the screen together in Philadelphia Story, I mean, it doesn't matter to me that it's genre or not genre or whatever. I mean, I'm just looking at magic. You know, when I see John Ford, direct, a Western landscape, and to me, it's just magic. When I see Clint Eastwood, you know, spit on a dog, it's just magic. You know, I mean, it's crazy, but it's true. It's just these great moments that I'm really thankful for. So I'm thankful for, you know, there's one channel out there that keeps that alive. I mean, sure, a lot of other movie channels show movies and everything like that, but none of them do it with such reverence and celebration that Turner Classic Movies does. And I'm grateful for them because I, you know, in this day and age where everybody's just worried about commercials, They seem to be more interested in preserving and showing us great entertainment of the past. And I got to give it up to them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know what? There's tons out there. There's tons for you guys to check out. And, you know, there's no reason for you not to enjoy a good movie. With that being said, we will probably next week come back with you and talk about the winners and losers at the Academy Awards this weekend. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Previously on Podcasterole. Glomer is one of the most underrated cartoon characters of all time.
Some call Glomer the Jar Jar of the PBU, you know. I haven't stepped foot inside of a Subway since, really.
And neither is Jared.
It's true.
You're over at my home every week. Is there a meth lab here?
Not a big one.
I choose him, the one called Kirk. I'm freaking James T. Kirk.
Find out more about Podcasterole now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. And don't forget AdamandJP.com and the ESO Network.
Welcome back to the show. We are here now with a friend of ours who hasn't been on ESO, God, for what, 4 years now, I think? And so let's welcome, before we start with any of the formalities, welcome Larry Johnson back to ESO. Welcome, sir.
Hey, guys. Nice to be back.
It is nice to be around for 4 years so that you can be back with us over this amount of time.
Isn't that awesome when, like, time flies, you realize? As you started something a while ago, and it's like, holy cow, it's been that long.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Welcome back to the station, sir. What have you been doing with yourself?
Wow. What have I been doing? A whole bunch of stuff in the last year. Yeah. We took some time off. We threatened to produce some more of the, like the sex and drug education shorts that we did. And we threatened, as I say, cause we never actually got any of those done. We wrote a bunch, but, never got around to recording them, but that will change now. We're going to start recording and get those out to the book and stuff in addition to the live shows.
Awesome. Awesome. And for those people who are may not have been familiar or may not have heard of Cineprov, what's a quick description of what that is?
It's basically a live version of Mystery Science Theater 3000 without the robots. If you don't know what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is, it becomes exponentially more difficult to explain my show. But essentially, we show bad movies or cheesy movies, and the three comedians basically make fun of them and just riff on them and cast sarcastic and snarky comments. And it's an awesome night out and a fun time for all.
Now, do you find when you're selecting the movies for this, do you find that it's easier to pick, bad movies, or does there have to be a certain element to really make it a winner?
Well, it's funny. We've gone through a lot of changes in our philosophy over the years. Like Cineprov has been around since 2005, which is amazing to me.
Absolutely. But, yeah. Congratulations. Thank
you. But, like when we first started, we were in a little improv theater and we were doing like B movies, like MST type movies. I mean, the first movie we ever made fun of was called The Undertaker and His Pals, which I mean, just the title alone should tell you what we were going for. Then we did that. Then we kind of transitioned into more like the bigger, more recent Hollywood movies and like Top Gun and Days of Thunder and anything with Tom Cruise or anything with like Patrick Swayze, and that was cool too. But we're actually, when we're starting again in March, we're actually going back to our riffing roots, and we're going back to B movies. We're opening with March with Night of the Living Dead, the original one, and then like Boy in the Plastic Bubble and Devil Dog Hound of Hell, things like that. We just want to get back to our roots, and you know, we gave this a lot of thought, and we've just, like, with Mystery Science Theater 3000 rebooting and starting on Netflix soon, we think that's going to, you know, sort of help broaden our audience. And we want to we want to just sort of keep it in the same spirit of that, where, like, for me, when I used to turn the show on, yeah, I didn't know what movie they were going to be doing, and it didn't really matter, you know, what movie it was coming on. It was, you know, I just wanted to hang out with, you know, Joel or Mike and the robots and just, you know, watch the comments and the funniness. And that's kind of what we're going for. You know, we really don't want it to be a matter of what movie it is that we're doing. I think we're going to do like two big movies a year, or one big movie and then our Ruining Childhood Memories Christmas show that we do every year, where we do like Rudolph and Charlie Brown Christmas and things like that. But, you know, beyond that, I think we're just going to stick with the classics, like Incredible Two-Headed Transplant and Gargoyles and things like that.
It is, I think that you've hit on the head of it, where just like a lot of things, I think it is, the secret of success is not, you know, the what movies they are, but the fact that you've got these characters, individuals who are, that you want to hang out with. And that's what the key to MST3K was. And obviously, Cineprov brings that to you as, and I would say that the casual nature of it probably is a little bit misleading, because probably a lot of people think that, oh, well, that's so easy. Anybody could do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. We all came from like improv backgrounds. So, you know, again, in the past, the shows were, and when we first started, they were completely improvised. We didn't even like watch the movie or, you know, like see what the running time was, which led to the great Last of the Mohicans debacle.
I can only imagine.
2007. I believe. that was ill-conceived. That we did like, oh, it'll be our Thanksgiving show. We'll do that one the day after Thanksgiving. It'll be great. And then it was like 3 hours and like 12 lines of dialogue, and we all wanted to kill ourselves. And then like when we moved to the Plaza, we would like sort of watch the movie once and just, you know, it was a little less improvised. And now we're going for more of just not really improvised so much as we're watching it at least like twice in advance and writing stuff down. So it's going to be, you know, again, much like Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's going to be a much better prepared show. Because we want to make sure that the shows are good, particularly since I just announced a money back guarantee for our show, which I believe is unprecedented in the entertainment industry.
That's pretty daring.
We're just like, you know what? Nobody's, you know, people are on the fence or whatever about Cena. They don't know who we are. They don't know what we do necessarily. We want to, you know, give them, say, hey, just give it a try. You know, we think you'll like, we know you'll like it. So we're, you know, we're prepared to give money back if we have to. And so we're making the efforts to prepare the show to be awesome. And, you know, we need you guys to come out and see the awesomeness, basically.
The big difference, of course, with, you know, watching something like that on television and then seeing it live, like you guys perform, is you have the potential of obviously for, you know, audience participation, whether it's warranted or not. Do you guys welcome audience participation or?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's two schools of thought. Like in the past, here's what's happened in the past. I'll just tell you that. I would hear somebody yell something out, and if it was funny, I would repeat it with a microphone, and then everyone would hear it, which was one way to go. And then there were also the occasional nights where people would like yell stuff that wasn't funny, and like I've had audiences shout someone down, basically, just be like, you know, shut up, you're not funny, let the professionals do it. So that was, you know, you're paying us to do it. So just enjoy the show. You know, don't feel like you need to add anything is kind of my feeling. You know, we'll take care of it. We got 800 jokes or something to tell. So I think you'll be okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for those people who are not familiar, where do you guys perform?
We're going to be performing, it's the first Thursday of every month at the historic Plaza Theater on Ponce, 1049 Ponce.
Nice.
And
nice to see the Plaza doing stuff like that again.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, the Plaza is fantastic with Rocky Horror, and I think The Room is going to start again soon, they were saying. So there's a lot of cool, fun stuff going down there. The show's going to start at 7. The doors are going to open at 7. We're going to run shorts that we've recorded between like 7 and 7:45. So you can get into the spirit and get into the mood. And then the live show with the movie of the month is going to start at 7:45 every month.
Very nice. Very nice. And yes, this is something that you guys are doing monthly for the rest of the year, or?
Yeah, I mean, for the rest of time, as far as we know, you know, I mean, if we can, if enough people start showing up, maybe we can do it more than monthly. But, you know, for now, monthly's good enough for us. Yeah, like I said, we're going to, you know, we're doing the money back guarantee. We're also doing a thing where if people, like, you know, there's always that one person who kind of organizes the parties or is the straw that stirs the drink. That's if you bring like five other people with you, we'll let you in for free. So, you know, gather some friends because the shows are always better when they're crowded. And you know, it's always more fun, you know, on like a date or like with a group of your friends to come out and see the show. So we're trying to get the, you know, the decision makers of every group an incentive to come and bring a crowd. You know, we'll let them in for free, basically. So
very cool concept.
You know, you decision makers out there. You guys who decided that fur sneakers was the way to go, you know, bring it. That's what we said.
Very nice. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, we thought so. And we just want people. We want people to come see the show and give it a try and, you know, enjoy themselves. It's fun. So fun for us, fun for them.
And and how many other are in the troupe that that do this?
There's six of us still. There's always been like a core six. It's basically the same group that was together before we stopped a little over a year ago. It's Mark Olson and Ken Hudak and Don Emery and Lowry Scott Taylor, and then Holly Loy, who actually started the show with me back in 05, has returned from a lengthy hiatus. So she's going to be back. It's cool. My theater wife is back with me. So so we're excited to have her back and the whole gang back together. So. Yeah, and it's three performers every show.
Gotcha. So it's maybe mix up the three every show out of the six.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, depending on availability and who can make the run throughs and the writing and stuff, you know, we'll kind of pick a cast. We'll probably post the cast on Facebook, on our Facebook page and all. So if you really really love Don or something, you know, and want to make sure he's in the show, then you know, we'll let you guys know.
Well, that's very cool. So you guys have a Facebook page, and where can people go to find you online to find out more information about this?
The best place is cineprov.com. And then we do have a Cineprov page on Facebook and a Cineprov fans page. You know, once you've been to a show and become a fan, you can join, you'll be allowed to join that group. Those are pretty much the places. I mean, cineprov.com is, you know, everything you would want to find out or know about the show is there. So that's probably the best place. But, you know, we would always obviously like more Facebook friends. So either place is fine, really. Twitter, awesome. We're on Twitter, at Cineprov, Instagram, you know, any of the normal channels, you can pretty much search Cineprov and find us.
Well, we will definitely encourage people, as always, to check out the website and check out the show. Certainly anybody in the area. And heck, it's probably even worth traveling to, I would say. Because you guys, it's a weekend event, right?
It's a Thursday.
Oh, it's on Thursday. Okay.
Yep. It's a work night, so, yeah. You know.
It is a work night. Ah.
But that being said, we're done by 9:30. So, you know, we're all big kids. I think we can make it.
Exactly. or as we like to say, we're not as young as we used to be.
Right. And there is a bar at the plaza. Did I mention that?
Oh, even better.
Bar. Well, see, you should have buried the lead,
sir. We have koozies. The first 20 people that come to the show in March will get a free Cineprov koozie. So get there early. And then if you're late, you can buy a koozie for $5.
You had me a koozie. I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. See, there you go. There you go. That's cool. So definitely we'll let everybody know. We'll have a link on our show notes for Cineprov as well. And anything else you got going on? Anything else that's keeping you busy?
I'm excited about the launch of Mystery Science Theater 3000 coming on Netflix. I can't really announce why I'm very excited, but when it does come out, I'd urge you to watch episode 1107. That's kind of all I can say about that. But 1107 is one that fans of me or Cineprov will be particularly interested in, I would say.
Intriguing.
Curious, I know, right? You might say.
A tease, a little tease for when that comes out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And anything else?
No, I got a new dog recently. He's great.
my wife's ears just popped up. Eat dog? You said dog?
Exactly. Now we're gonna have to put a link to your Facebook page or your Instagram so people can see pictures of your dog.
Yeah, we adopted a German Shepherd, Prince Edgar Johnson, named after Edgar from my favorite TV show other than MST, You're the Worst. Which, are you guys familiar with You're the Worst,
mm-hmm. Mike? I do.
It's the greatest show on television.
It's a fun one. It is a fun one.
Yeah, so try to get as many people to watch that as I can. Doing my best to help them.
Absolutely. Well, look, it's been great to have you back. We'll definitely have to make sure that it's more, you're on more often than every 4 years.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm always around whenever you need me. If you need someone to comment on something stupid, I'm your guy.
Well, we could always use another hand with that, because sometimes I don't think we're stupid enough. So with our comments, so.
Can anybody really be stupid enough?
we're trying, darn it.
Well, aim high, man.
Well, okay. Well, thank you so much, sir. And we will definitely have links up to, of course, the show. And please, you know, let us know when your episode of the thing we're not supposed to talk about yet.
Right. The thing that we can't speak of.
Exactly. 1107. Exactly. 1107. Right. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And, exactly. You know, maybe we'll have you on after it goes live and have you talk about it a little bit.
That would be awesome. I would appreciate it.
Awesome, man.
That would be awesome to do.
Cool.
Can do.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment. And we're going to be talking all about science.
Science.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time to talk all about science. And yes, Dr. Geek himself, Scott Vigay, and also Lucas Garrett are back with us to talk all about science. Hey, Dr. Scott.
Hey there.
You ready to do some science talk?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot has happened since last time we had one of these segments. Oh my gosh. You know, when you asked me the other day, hey, so what topics? I'm like, oh my gosh, we've covered all sorts of stuff, and it's just amazing what happens. And in fact, today alone, there was something like 27 new stories that popped up on our Facebook page about science fiction-inspired science that it could have just been everything that happened today, let alone what's happened since the last time we had one of these talks. Where to begin? How about the fact that 3D printing is actually helping people regain the ability to walk? How cool is that? And what's really important about that story is the fact that the 3D printing was used as rapid prototyping. You know, they had a person whose condition was rapidly deteriorating, and so they needed to be able to make sure that whatever spine replacement they did would work. And so a time being of the essence, quite literally, they were able to use the rapid prototyping, get the plastic model and test it and test for vulnerabilities and all that sort of stuff. And then once they knew that they had a design that was going to work, then they were able to actually craft the real replacement out of the proper material that they were going to use. I think it was like titanium or something along those lines. So something that is not readily easily 3D printable at the moment. But they were able to, you know, to do that and do the surgery under the wire and actually get it to the point where the person will eventually fully recover.
Oh, that is awesome.
I know, right? And that's just one of the more mundane things that I had on the list, you know? It goes as far as talking about black holes and whether or not the one of the fundamental laws of the universe, the idea that energy cannot be destroyed, but it just changes state, whether or not that rule is actually in jeopardy. How bizarre is this? So, okay, I'm Dr. Geek, and at 4 in the morning, I get a post. Someone asks me, "Hey, what do you know about bald black holes versus hairy black holes and fine hair black holes?" You know, like, what is that about?
Don't look that up, folks, because you might get some interesting sites you might not want to go
see. Right.
Yeah,
you would. But, you know, it was one of the things where I was like, okay, I've got to look this up. And
I'm actually rename that completely if it was up to me, you know. Because you're not going to get anything scientific if you go that route.
But, no.
but it's going to be interesting because it changes it, Scott, but it also kind of reaffirms it. It just actually branches it out because what it shows, at least from what little I could understand of the paper, and we need to thank one of our members, Peter, Peter Longstreet, right?
Yes.
Giving that article because he actually has the paper. It started as an abstract, and then we just saw all the equations in it, and we said, huh. The only issue is really the name itself because they could have renamed it any other way. But right. if what Stephen Hawking is proposing is possible, then it also gives more weight to the wormhole theory because what it does it says is that it's possible that a black hole is actually a wormhole and all you got to do is just go from one universe to the next universe. It's almost no different than fiber optics or even the modern internet as we have it, where you had a different website that connects all together, almost like one big spider web. And it would just be like nature for us to figure that out. But the fact that Stephen is having to relook at his old work and saying, I missed something and this is a possibility, gives more possibilities to the astrophysicists and physicians and as well as technicians who are out here who are saying, let's see if we can push this even further because we're going to eventually have to get to these planets. And also, since this is definitely recent, NASA is going to be having a press conference about other exoplanets outside of the universe. I found it in another article, but NASA.gov was able to confirm it. So I give it between the next day or maybe two before we have a press conference of that sort. So it's going to be interesting. We got
coming. I really wonder what they're going to announce. I mean, especially when it comes to exoplanets, have they come to the idea that they might be able to verify some sort of life? I mean, that's what we all want to hear, right? And then once they do, how quickly can we get there? Right. You know, to tie it back to what Lucas was saying about the wormholes, what was fascinating is that Stephen Hawking up to this point had basically turned his back on or discounted at least the idea of white holes and other dimensional travel, but his own idea of Hawking radiation, which means that at some point the black hole itself will deteriorate, and then that in itself isn't so bad. But the question becomes, what happens to everything that the black hole had devoured? What happens to that information? What happens to that energy? And if a black hole were immortal and everything was just trapped beyond our reach of comprehension inside a black hole, well, then that's fine. But if a black hole eventually itself destroys itself, then everything that was in the black hole would be lost. And so the question becomes, where does it go? And so even he had to reevaluate. So, I mean, that's the great thing about science. Sometimes you have a long-standing theory, and after a while you go, you know, upon second thought, maybe that's not so right, or maybe that leads to other conclusions. And that's the part that drives me to just be so excited about the topic in general.
Well, it's interesting because there's so many different theories, but for Stephen Hawking to come out with this.
Right, exactly, right? Exactly. I mean, it's one thing for someone like myself to go, well, hey, you know, I didn't think about that or something like that. But Hawking, you know, his reputation is such that when he takes a second look, that really means something to a lot of people. And I think it humanizes him a little bit, because it also shows just how, you know, if he can be able to admit that he has to reevaluate or rethink, or new things come in that challenge his own points of view, then that's a great learning model for everybody else, you know? And I think also you know, over at Dr. Geek's Laboratory, we do science from fiction, and we're all science fiction geeks here, and we're all science geeks. And I think that everything that was on the topics that Lucas and I picked all kind of, you know, reinforce that. Everything from NASA's new spacesuit that looks like something from it looks like something from Thunderbirds or Go. I don't know. Have you guys seen this thing? Have you had a chance to take a look at that?
It's absolutely gorgeous. I love the design. It is a mixture between Thunderbirds Go, the old Thunderbirds, Gerry Anderson television series, and 2001. It is all in blue, and it's beautiful. I love it.
I saw it, and I was like thinking, open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Only now it would be Siri, please open the pod bay doors.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting though, because if you look at them, they are so not the bulky spacesuits you saw Neil Armstrong in at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an evolution of the technology, but it also what I saw when I saw that suit, I thought, oh, this isn't designed for some sort of, you know, quick jaunt up to the moon or something along those lines. This is designed for them to really use for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So they needed something that was going to be usable for a duration, you know, and it also kind of implied a different environment than the moon, possibly more Mars. You know, some of the if you guys have been following like the Mars One material from NASA from like the 1980s. I'm not talking about the reality show. There was actually, I think, Wernher von Braun actually created some documents calling it like Mars One. It was like the initial idea for colonization of Mars, and then over time there have been new Range Rover type of Mars rover things where it was piloted by an individual and it's part suit, part vehicle. You know, those kinds of things. And the interim suit looks a lot like the current design being unveiled today. So it's kind of cool. I think that, you know, we're gearing towards Mars ever so slightly.
Well, it's interesting. And as many people who know me very well, I'm not a huge fan of the current administration, but we're not getting political at all on the show. So I'm not going into that rabbit hole. But one of the things that he actually said that I really liked was that he wants to open Earth's lower orbits into the private industry and leave the full, you know, space exploration to NASA to go to Mars, to go further out to the asteroids, back to the moon. He says, and I hate to say it, he's saying it perfectly. I'm praising him, you know, don't shoot me for that, folks, but he actually said it perfectly. That's what needs to happen.
He's
doing it right. NASA shouldn't be wasting its time on lower Earth orbit and, you know, letting that go to private industry. And, you know, let NASA do what it does well, sending probes out, sending explorers out to Mars and out, you know, into the solar system. It's time, folks. It really is.
In many ways, it patterns every other sort of development we've ever done as the human race. You know, you have the explorers, the risk takers that really pioneer the frontier. Mm-hmm. And then once that gets kind of, once the frontier no longer is the frontier, then, you know, your explorers and your risk takers have to go further out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a chance to actually talk to one of the astronauts at the space facility here in Florida. And it was one of those, you know, meet an astronaut at lunch things. I asked him what he thought about the whole privatization of space. And this is about maybe at this point now, it's about 2.5 years ago. And, you know, it was a very emotional subject to bring up. I mean, if you ever want to see an astronaut cry, you know, and I didn't want that kind of reaction, but it was one of those things that was very emotional because it had to be that realization that, you know, it's time to reevaluate, you know, what's going to happen with low Earth orbit. But, you know, the thing that was very, very positive about the interaction was that the understanding that there was still a place for NASA astronauts and that, you know, they are going to be the is going to be their dominion to do high orbit and beyond, to, you know, to go take us to Mars, take us to Titan and beyond our solar system. And as long as, you know, those men and women get a chance to still participate, that there's still a role for them, then there should be no reason why there should be privatization of space. And I think Lucas actually, you know, had something about SpaceX, right? That was just happened at the Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah, it was outstanding. And it was necessary because you got people like Richard Brandt and Elon Musk. They are funding this and they're true believers, guys. You know, they're out there saying to themselves, you know, we have the technology to do this. Let's make it happen. And it's going to – this is a learning process. And it's beautiful when you think about it because what you have is government and private interests to be able to get us further out into the cosmos because that's where we were supposed to be in the first place. And the interesting thing is that we're kind of like behind the eight ball. Because what we thought we were going to have in fiction, everything from Back to the Future to 2001, 2010, and so forth, we're actually like about a few years behind, but we're catching up. And they're not playing around. They're putting in their resources to make it happen. And so this earlier launch this past weekend was such a big win because what it does is that it puts more advertisers, more backers, and who says, you know what? We got hope. We have hope to make this happen. And so I'm waiting with bated breath to see what happens next because really, I don't think that even SpaceX and other companies like that are going to reside with just the low orbit. They are going to allow the frontier to be taken care of by NASA. But once everything is done with, they're going out right behind. It's almost like a wagon train.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Perfect analogy.
You know when it's going to explode is when they find rare minerals and such in the asteroid belt.
It's going to be like the gold rush frontier all over again.
Oh, very much so. And it's
only on Red Dwarf, right?
Oh, please, no.
Ray Bradbury called it. He did. Everything from his Martian Chronicles, Asimov called it. The thing is this. We are a resources industry, and we are a resources society, which means this. And we can find resources out there in the great cosmos that could be able to make life better here as well as in other planets where there's human life, that's what we're going to do. You know, that goes without any type of civilization or any type of government. When they see the need, they're going to push it. Are there going to be, crisis and disasters along the way? Of course, because that's just the way we grow.
But it's happened all through human history.
Exactly. But because of what's happened in the past, we now live literally in the future. We are building the future right now, guys. And we're building not just by just talking about it, we're building it by the connections that we make, the context that we make, and the interest that we put in there. Because at the end of the day, it's about what is your focus? And their focus now is, okay, we're going to get a colony to Mars by 2050. Now, there are a lot of people who say, realistically, it'll be 100 years, but I'll be honest with you. If they are fast-tracking technology that I wasn't expecting to see within the next 10 years, then they're doing it. And right now, for instance, and this is kind of like a segue into it, hover technology right now is on the up. I expect by the time I hit 60, I'm going to see possibly a helicarrier. I'm serious as a heart attack, guys, because it's there. It's possible. You have both mass scientists, and I call them that because I see them on YouTube, as well as other people who are literally right now saying, okay, we are able to build these machines But we have to be able to build them smart. And we have to build them in a way that people don't think that, oh, this isn't a hoax. Because right now, as it stands, for the last 5 years, they've been showing hover tech, everything from hoverboards to hover bikes.
Yeah, the hover bikes, right, yeah.
Exactly. And these machines are going to be needed when we actually go out there, because they're going to need fast tracking to go and be able to explore. It just won't just be off-road. What happens if you're in an area where there's barely any road? Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be able to travel. So they're fast tracking it now. And everybody from BMW to a bunch of European and Russian interests, like, for instance, on the Dr. Geek's think tank Facebook group, which I highly recommend. Anybody who's listening to this.
Plug.
Absolutely, Mike. Anything you care about science tech-wise, you come to be with us at that group. We welcome you with open arms.
Absolutely.
You guys have seen the pictures of the hover motorcycle.
They got with this is what's happened. BMW got with Lego, and they had this startup called BMW New, I think. It is kind of like a training firm for their BMW technicians and mechanics and engineers to see what they can push. Well, Lego a while back did a bike that was able to interchange from a regular motorcycle to a hover bike. Well, they were able to make a life-size model of what that bike would look like, both the actual one on wheels as well as a hover bike. Now, the one on a hover bike don't hover. And anything you see online that says that is actually just computer stills of what the bike will look like. This thing is on an actual platform, so it's not going to hover at all. But there is one being developed right now by HoverSurf that is called the Scorpion 3. And all you got to do is go to our group or go online to Facebook and look for the Mashable videos. Or just go to my wall, Lucas Garrett, and you'll see all of the links to it, because the Russians are not playing with concerns this. And things is this. This is technology that the rest of the world is getting into. So it is important upon us to be able to get into that technology too, so we don't get left behind.
And, you know, what's interesting is watching that Scorpion 3 go through its little test, you know, where it does a little hop and everything. I look at that and go, I would be causing so much damage. 10 minutes on that thing, I would end up colliding into something.
Scott, yeah. I see you on those little scooters at Dragon Con. I don't want to see you on anything hovering.
No. I can't. I should have a restriction on my license. Cannot hover. That would be bad.
And speaking of restrictions, I showed that to my mom, and she's an insurance adjuster. She's been one for like well over 30 years.
Yeah.
And she was saying, oh, my God. I just saw her like shake her head, because she's just thinking to herself, we're going to have to cover this eventually.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I can just see the farmer's insurance commercial. We cover it. That's awesome. Well, you know, and then, of course, if you want to talk about hover technology and some of the other things along those same lines, there was some movement over the last couple months about the Hypertube and the Hyperloop that Elon Musk wants to do, and they were actually some trials with the capsules and stuff like that. I mean, that shows a lot of promise. I mean, somebody asked me whether or not this technology could then be, you know, converted and adjusted to use as a delivery system to getting into orbit. And as it is currently designed, I don't think that would work exactly that way, because of the way you need to use the track, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the thing is this, that's like currently now, but they just have to – there are loopholes to be able to get it there, but they're just going to have to actually make the technology to actually get to that point. And that's the whole thing. They have to like literally build upon what they already have and then be able to get to that. But you're right. At this current state, it's not a go.
But Hyperloop is just such an amazing technology, and technically it's based off of almost 100-year-old technology.
Exactly, because we're talking about Jules Verne, you know, prophesizing, you know, such technology, and here we are in 2017, and being able to say, you know what, let's make this happen. So we got ways to go, but like I said, all I got to do is just live long enough, and I'm going to see all these wonders. That's all I got
to
do.
You know, when it comes to the Hyperloop, I really, you know, I think that it has such potential. I mean, I've seen the models. I've seen, you know, some of the simulations. And for places like California that have been really trying to invest in high-speed rail, you know, this is better. You know what I mean? The only question becomes – I guess, how does it interact with I don't know, you know, faults and other geographic problems? You know, how do you handle that issue? But I'm sure that it can be addressed. You know, and I kind of hope, because of the Jules Verne connection, every time I see one of the reports about the Hyperloop, I envision something that kind of looks like a canister from my old bank, and with a red velvet quilted couch with a lot of brass. You know, I kind of have this image in my head of what this should look like.
Yeah, something that Captain Nemo or Robot the Conqueror would ride in.
Yeah, exactly.
Hell, just think Futurama.
Right. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Well, with Futurama, with the tube, the thing about that is, like, they never get to carry anything. I mean, what happens when you bring luggage with you on your trip? I you know, oh my gosh. Of all the other items to talk about, oh my gosh. Obviously we every once in a while we keep an eye on the bionics with the kids getting the replacement arms, and
I love that. That girl was having so much fun with that.
Yeah.
Well it's amazing what you showed today with the person with the eyes.
Yeah.
The visor.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, from
Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that. So the visor is, you know, something along the lines that you sit there and go like, okay, this makes sense. And really what it is something that's enhancing what's already there. So the key to remember is that this is working with somebody who has very low vision, but they still have vision, which means that there's something still to work with. And it also means that the individual was at one point more probably fully sighted, so that there is not an internal mental interpretation issue. You know, if you have somebody who is always blind from birth, this really wouldn't work. But this is such a step in the right direction for that, and for it to be able to bring a person back to more functional vision, that's, you know, fantastic. Mm-hmm. But when you boil it all down, it's nothing more than a series of monitors and relays. And you're like, well, that's great. How come that wasn't available 10 years earlier? Well, it's a matter of getting the technology small enough, right? And so now that we've got at least this Mark One visor. I want the learning curve to be flattened out, and I want them to be able to do more for this person and for people who I never had sight to begin with.
No, that's a good way to put it, sir.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so I was impressed by it, but but this should have been available 15 years ago.
Imagine when they actually miniaturize it to a level where it'll look like Google Glasses.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be outstanding. I mean, and it won't take that long. All they got to do is just get the kinks out for this prototype model that they're using right now, and then from there they can just let's say, oh, you used to have good sight, okay, and it's now dimming. Okay, you're legally blind. Okay, put on these glasses, and it'll be a whole new world for them. I mean, you're talking about augmented reality,
right?
Merge that with this, literally, and that's the thing. They're giving people back what was most important, which is hope. Everything from lost limbs to not be able to walk again, not be able to see again. We actually have technology. We literally have $6 million, you know, technology is coming.
Right. Yeah. We can do it. And talk about hope. We have another contributor, Dave, who is contributes every once in a while on the think tank and the like. And I did not realize this. I mean, I've been friends with him for a while, but you know, it's one of those things where, like, it's mostly a virtual friendship, so you don't know everything about the person's life. Mm-hmm. And it found out that we posted early this week about the use of stem cells to actually take your fat and convert it to a multi-tissue stem cell. Mm-hmm. That would then allow you to do things like organ replacement. And it was something that, you know, hinted at the possibility of doing an artificial kidney or a replacement kidney without having to do the lattice and the 3D printing and all that other stuff and all the things that still aren't working the way they should be working, right? Dave responded very positively to that, and then I found out that, you know, he's dealing with kidney issues, and like, well, this is why this is very important to him. But it could breakthroughs in like stem cell technology could be game changing. I mean, it could literally rewrite what it means to have medical issues.
Yeah, it could prolong life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And the idea that we could somehow convert fat tissue, I mean, please, take mine. I've got plenty. You know, I mean.
I was going to say, look at us on the podcast here, you know.
Yeah, I'd be glad. All, yeah.
We will be immortal.
Yeah, I'd be glad to donate all my fat cells if it meant that, you know, that people could have kidneys and other issues taken care of. I mean, what that article was talking about was how it could actually be a way to handle cancer and aging and the whole kind of cell degradation issue that happens with life. But it could also go to being used to create multi-tissue stem cells that could allow them to grow kidneys and other organ replacements and stuff like that. And what was interesting was that the article suggested that human trial was going to happen sometime at the end of this year. And then that goes kind of hand in hand with one of the other articles that I think Lucas pointed out originally, which was kind of a Island of Dr. Moreau problem, mm-hmm. where they are going to be using, pig
tissue. Human and pig DNA is being merged, hybrid. Technology just for this actual fact. Now, of course, I made like an end joke, like, yeah, a la Dr. Moreau, even though there is that possibility if put in the wrong hands. But I understand the necessity of it because it at least helps out as far as where organ transplant and so forth. Right. And most of the science that we got now, everything from GMOs, genetically modified organisms, and everything like that. This is, you know, this is a dicey subject, but there's merit for it, but there's also concern for it. So you got to be able to skate that line, you know.
Well, exactly. You have to be, if exploration of these topics could be so life rewriting, mm-hmm. if they could solve so many problems, it's behoove on all of us to be involved, understand what's involved, so that the ethics of it all, you know, how do we want to apply it? How does it work? Exactly. That's part of the conversation too. That's part of being a fan of science is also understanding how to apply it.
Yeah, because everything got to be above board. It's like no information is deleted out. Everybody's got to know what is no different than the drugs and the medications. You see the commercials where they pretty much say, if you do this, you might get this, 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 and it might even cause death. So you might want to think about it. It's no different. You know, that same guideline still needs to be applied with this. But at the same time, the fact that this technology is out there, there has to be a reason for it. So I'm just looking at it very, very, very cautiously optimistic that the right hands will get, you know, a hold of it and say, okay, let's see how far we can take this. Because
exactly. I don't think it's going to be kind of Daleks meets Daleks in Manhattan. I don't think it's going to I don't think it's going to go that route. But at
Terry Nation would be going, up from heaven. He'd be going
with his head like, ha, 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 like, you know, mad scientist. Yeah. And you don't want that.
No, he'd be going, I'm going to sue you.
That's right. This is my technology. But at the same time, I think that it's something worth exploring, because organ replacement and everything is such a big deal. If you think about how other countries handle it, right now, at the beginning of the year, in January 1, was a big deal in France. They actually passed a law where, by default, everyone is an organ donor. And you have to opt out in order to not be on the list. And that is that tells you about the demand and stuff like that. So anything we can do to better deal with this issue, it's worth at least exploring, you know. And then you have to be able to use good judgment, and that's why it's good to have everybody know what you're doing and have everything reviewed and all that other stuff. So it was like I said, and this is just a scratch of the surface of the things that have happened since last time we talked.
So much stuff. But it gives me promise that they actually are saying, you know what, we've seen all these movies, all these television shows, they're showing us the future. Let's actually make the future. Because it's one thing to actually have that as a thought process and say, huh, wouldn't that be interesting? You got people who are like diehard saying, no, you know what, I'm done just watching on, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars or Battlestar Galactica or anything that we're going to see if we can make this, you know, happen. And the interesting thing is that where there's a will, there's a way. And if there isn't a will, you make a way. And they figured out a way to, with science and, you know, with technology and with their own, you know, brains, say, yes, I'm going to make this happen. I'm just loving it. I'm loving it every day.
Well, to just sort of ride on those coattails of what you talked about, you know, creating science from fiction, and, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. There's someone who, you know, there's a bunch of people that are working on de-extinction, the idea of bringing extinct animals back. And, you know, they've been promising that for a while. You know, of course.
Is this the woolly mammoth one?
Yep. I tipped my hat a little bit when talking to you earlier in the week about this. So yeah, there's actually going to be an attempt this year to bring back the woolly mammoth, and you sit there going, oh, it's a teddy bear elephant. How we can handle that. It's not a dinosaur. It's not going to be a T-Rex. This should be good. We can handle a mammoth, right?
I'm in the corner, and then I'm in the corner shaking my head saying, think before you do.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, or you can always quote Jeff Goldblum from the first Jurassic Park movie.
Yes. Ian Malcolm, you know, there'll be people wearing memes of that shirt, right? Going around going, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. I wonder about that, you know, especially what's going to happen if they do succeed, because right now circuses, you know, can't have elephants, but can we have a woolly mammoth? I don't know. I mean, you know, those are questions that I wonder how we're going to protect the animals we bring back and all that sort of stuff. But
not just that, we also got to realize this, everything has its time.
Yeah.
Just this, the air quality that the Tyrannosaurus rex, the pterodactyl, and all those dinosaurs back then is a different air quality and survivability than it is now. And so a lot of scientists and technicians need to put that all into context when they decide, oh, yeah, we can bring these animals back. Yes, you might be able to breathe them back, but the question is, will they be able to survive in the current environment?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, you have to be able to make artificial environments that are based on what you think they actually had back then, as opposed to what they were. Because if that's the case, then you are just pretty much making dead animals who pretty much they are going to be here and then gone the next.
Yeah, and,
you know, that's a big issue. That, you know, like I said, it goes back to ethics, but it also goes back to what Goldblum said.
Yeah.
And he said that it's a layered statement. It really is. It's a very layered statement. Yes, you have the technology, but really, should you be able to? Because there are variables that you might not be able to account for. Plus, there's one thing that they had back then that they didn't have now. They had themselves. They didn't have humans, you know. So that changes the whole thing. I mean, we see movies from the Jurassic Park movies. They should be literally put into every scientific score in the out there. Say, see this here? Learn from it. These animals are not for amusement.
There is no reason for there to be woolly mammoths anymore.
At all. They were there for their time. Let them be there for their time. And it's now our time and the other animals and plants that are here. And then there will be a time when we will no longer be here on this planet. And there'll be other things. Like I said, everything happens in stages. And certain things should not be brought back, because then you bring a Pandora's box of scenarios that we can't even fathom. And we can't cross that road, because that means we put ourselves in danger.
No, that's a great way to put it. Yeah. Be careful. You know, playing God is a little bit tough first off. And then when you do it, there are, you know, reasons for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are consequences and responsibilities.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there we go. I think that's the update. But in a short little while, we'll have a whole lot more we can talk about.
Oh, every time we have you guys back, there'll be more and more stuff to chat about. And, you know, my head's still spinning about half the things that, you know, that we talked about. Did you guys hear, you know, it's science, but not, you know, Dr. Geek Science. Another scientist, Bill Nye, they've announced his premiere of his new show.
Yes, he's back.
Yes, woo-hoo! Bill Nye, the Science Guy, is going to have a show on Netflix.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. It's going to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very, very happy. He was doing a whole bunch of public appearances last year, and he was definitely gearing up for something. And it's really cool, and is to see him embrace the new media and be able to take his show to a whole new level, I think. And also, you know, over time he has developed several topics he's very passionate about. I can't wait to see how he handles them. It's going to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is a big proponent of the solar sail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the things he's, you know, out there with. And, you know, I knew Bill Nye when I lived in Seattle years and years ago. I've met him multiple times, and he is the guy you see up on the TV, folks.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's not an act or anything. This is, you know, what he is. Same thing with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are genuine people who love science and just are trying to get the word out. They just have great press agents.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was Neil deGrasse Tyson actually was out here a couple months ago, and he was talking about science in science fiction. He had a great presentation. And, you know, like me, we both say, you know, it's all about starting the conversation. If Star Trek or Doctor Who or Battlestar Galactica or Robotech is what got you interested in robotics or whatever and all that sort of stuff, then great. Then let's use that passion and introduce you to the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the great thing about it. And, you know, there's all these things out there about science. That's one of the things I loved about Mythbusters, because it touched on science.
Yeah,
I miss it.
I miss it. I so miss it. And, you know, my favorite episode is the one where they actually debunk the canon from Arena, from the Star Trek episode.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
It was so fantastic. As a kid, that's what you remember. You remember, oh, I can make gunpowder. And then they're like, well, yeah, you could if you had a preternatural ability to figure out the proportions, you know.
Not only can people see Neil, who's still touring, but I think it should be pointed out that Adam Savage's new venture, Brain Candy, is starting the tour too. So that should prove to be very exciting. I've been following him on Instagram, and he's going to take it's a little bit of a different angle, but it's basically, you know, still very much science based and trying to get people, you know, enthusiastic about science and how things work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's fantastic. I saw that he announced something, but I didn't really go into it. But I figured that someone so talented, they all need to still be involved somehow.
You knew Adam wasn't going to stay out of the limelight for long.
No.
No, he keeps himself too busy, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jamie, we'll never see him again. But Adam, Jamie will go back into his hibernated cave. But right. Adam will always be in the limelight. Of that I have no doubt.
Yep, yep.
No, then that's what's great about it. There are things out there that are so amazing. And, you know, it's inspired kids today to become, you know, scientists and become, you know, astrologers and, you know, everything. You know, astronomy is so big nowadays, and it's going to only be growing, folks.
Yeah. Well, it's the more we know about the universe, the more there is to know.
Well, exactly.
And this announcement that's coming up by NASA this week, you know, that's just going to make people so excited to learn more. There are actually experiments that you can do at home that you can help participate with when it comes to the search for extraterrestrial life. There's SETI at home, you know, and stuff like that. So if you're interested in astronomy and where it can go with exoplanets and all that sort of stuff, and there's all sorts of things like that.
And I've written NASA at least a dozen times about taking my dogs to send them out in space. So it's perfect.
Well,
I don't think Judy would like that much, but anyway, well, thank you guys so much for another wonderful science segment. And of course, Dr. Geek's Lab, of course, can be found here on the ESO network.
Yes, very proudly. Yes.
And you guys have done a great job of building up the Facebook group. And I think Lucas has been a great addition to that.
Oh, it's been wonderful. And in fact, what's been great about the Facebook group, because we've had a Facebook page since we started, but it's the mechanics of how both the page and the groups work that with the groups, people actually see every one of your posts without you having to boost them and all that sort of stuff. And the interaction that we're getting on the group, the Dr. Geek Think Tank, is what I was hoping we would have had 3 years ago. I mean, the way I look at it is, think of it as a virtual track room of your favorite convention.
Well, think of it this way. It's science. It just takes momentum and friction.
I see what you did there, Mike.
Well played, sir.
Exactly. And on that note, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Angela and Geek Girls Take and then the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girls Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the game Stardew Valley. I've been playing a lot of Steam games recently, and one, Stardew Valley, has really taken up a lot of hours of my life, for like the past 2 weeks. In this game, you move to a small town and take over your grandfather's farm. You have to make it all self-sufficient, and become friends with the townsfolk, and go on quests, and do lots of other really fun stuff. This game, as silly as it sounds, is really fun, and you will think you've only played it for an hour, and like 4 or 5 hours will have gone by. It seriously is like you're in a time warp. There is so much to do in this game, so you aren't doing the same stuff over and over and over. You can farm, raise animals, make friends with people, explore the mines, and so on. Seriously, hours and hours of gameplay. I would highly recommend this game to people who aren't fans of horror or fighting games. You get a good story. Depending on who you befriend in the game, you have lots of different outcomes as well. Only thing that is a bit annoying in this game is the fishing aspect, which can be really, really tricky if you're playing with an Xbox controller on your laptop. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. Oh, take me back to the
start. Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Con! Con!
Well, we've got very excited to have joining us once again, Michael Valentine from Comics Beyond the Comic Pages. Michael, welcome back to the station.
Well, thank you, guys. It's great to be back.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I want to hear about what you've been up to, but I understand that you've got a guest with you.
Yes, Captain Z from Big Apple Comic Con is with us on the line tonight, and we're going to talk a lot about this awesome screening coming up in March in New York City.
Absolutely. I'm very excited. I'm very excited to have you with us, Captain, because I've heard all about the Big Apple Comic Con. So very, very excited.
Well, thank you very much. We're very excited to have Michael Valentine here with us. I'm Captain Zorik here. I've been working for the show for a good long time. And when we found out that Michael's Valentine's movie existed, we decided that it would be a perfect thing to, we wanted it to be at our show, and we wanted it to be an exclusive thing. So we had the usual bit of negotiations that we won't take you through the blow by blows of, but we agreed that Big Apple Comic Con 2017, March 11th and 12th is going to be the New York City premiere. No time before this convention has his movie been shown in New York City. It's happening first at Big Apple Comic Con.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Michael. Because, you know, if you make it in New York City, if you make it at Big Apple, you've made it everywhere.
Oh, I'm taking a bite out of the Big Apple with
comics. Is that what I felt?
You must be really excited, Michael. That's pretty cool because you've had other screenings before, right?
Yeah, you know, as we talked about this last time I was on, you know, this movie that includes some amazing talent like Stan Lee and Frank Miller, Mark Waid, Mark Silvestri, John Romita Jr., among many others. It's a film to really be seen with other people. It's great to watch it at home, you know, on your Amazon Prime or on iTunes, but really lends itself with other people, you know, because it's one of those films that you want to be around other people who love comic books and love this industry as much as we do. And so it's a perfect fit to screen it at conventions. And, you know, I've done a few conventions now, but I'm really excited about Big AppleCon because, you know, Mike Carbonaro is just an amazing guy, and he puts on a great show, and he's got an amazing lineup this year that, you know, it's like I couldn't resist, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Captain, tell us a little bit about the history of the Big Apple Comic Con. How long you've been involved?
Yeah, I've been involved since about 2003, but I've been coming to the show for years before that. Big Apple Comic Con is New York's longest running convention. It predates New York Comic Con, though it postdates some other famous conventions in New York, like Phil Suling and Fred Greenberg and Creation, that no longer exist in New York City. It was, in fact, one of those conventions that was going to have a big show in Javits Center on a particular weekend, but on the Wednesday before that weekend, the guy running it just realized wasn't going to happen, so he canceled it. So Michael Carbonaro and a friend of his got into a taxi with a phone book. This was before everybody had a cell phone and Google whatever or Siri or whatever you want to call it. And by that afternoon, by that evening, they had found a basement in a church in Midtown West Side, right, not far from Lincoln Center. And they called up everybody, all the dealers they could get their hands on, and everybody set up. And Saturday morning, they opened doors, and hallelujah, they had a convention. And they said, you know what, we can do this. And so for the next bunch of years, they were holding 4, 5, 6 conventions a year while everybody else was too smart to hold a convention in New York City. So that went on for a whole bunch of years. I was sneaking in through the kitchen while I was going to the School of Visual Arts there. And then I teamed up with something called the Comic Book Artist Guild when it was just getting started. And I was brought my guitar so I could attract attention to our table and piss off an artist named Buzz at the same time. No, I wasn't doing that deliberately. That was just an added benefit. Buzz, I love you if you're out there. But Mike saw me there and he said, hey, I'll pay you a bunch of money. I'll pay you money if you go out and play your guitar to entertain the people online. So I did that. And the next thing you know, he's calling calling me up and asking me if I know which end of a computer is up. So I'm doing, next thing you know, I'm doing internet promotions. And then one time he says, you know, I can't afford to hold a costume contest. And I said, damn it, we got to have a costume contest. I'll find the prizes. I'll get sponsors. You don't, it won't cost you a penny. And that's how Captain Zork's costume contest got started. And if this were a show about my costume contest, I'd tell you all about it, except that let's just say that we don't need no stinking judges. That's what the audience is for. We got 70 contestants on the stage and off in 45 minutes, and every single freaking one of them got a prize that they deserved. That's what Captain Zork's costume contest is about, but we're not here to talk about that. Some years later, Wizard World made a deal, got a hold of the brand, tried to go head-to-head against New York Comic Con. Long story short, it didn't quite work out for them. In the meantime, Carbonaro was holding little one-day shows we call the New York Comic Book Marketplace, just basically to keep our, you know, keep our convention-holding muscles all limbered up.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, after Wizard World gave up, after a couple of years, the brand reverted back to Carbonaro. So a couple of years ago, we had the great 20th anniversary return of the Big Apple Con, even though it was only the 19th anniversary, but who's counting? But anyway... it was such a great show. It fed off the success of the first WinterCon, which had happened that year, that we did it again, and it was an even better success. We solved a few kinks and problems that we had to deal with, but we realized that the Penn Plaza Pavilion there's not enough space and time or one day in the Penn Plaza Pavilion to hold 6,000 people. So we doubled the number of days, made it a two-day affair, March 11th and 12th. We got three times the floor space, four times the programming. We're going to be on the 18th floor, the 6th floor, the Penn Plaza Pavilion. We got the panel room in the basement all day long this time. We got two panel rooms, one workshop room, at least one video game room. We got a cosplay photo room. We've got celebrities that include... one of Michael Valentine's superstars in the movie, Stan the Man Lee.
Enough Woo-hoo. Said.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean there isn't more to say. We are working on one other big name guest. I can't tell you who it is until we close the deal, but we'll let you
can
know
I
when
give
we close
him a
the
hint?
Deal. But can also, I... no.
Captain Z, can I give him a hint?
Let's just say, okay, I'll give him a hint. He has worked for both Marvel and DC and helped redefine the look of comics in the 1980s. That's as far as I'm going to go.
Can I give one more hint or no?
I don't want to risk it.
Okay.
But also I can say that we got John Bernthal, who has played both the Punisher and he drove a tank in a movie and he was in some TV show about zombies. We also have, deep breath now, Barbara Eben, Jason David Frank, Roy Woolley, Jackson Bostrick, Costanza Loken, Eldon Henson, Peter Shinkoda, Spencer Wilding. In the comic book world, we got Roy Thomas, Jim Steranko, Rich Buckler, Howard Chaykin, Michael Golden, Ramona Fraiden, Mark McCone, Arthur Sudam, Mark Baudet, Riley Brown, Billy Tucci, Shelley Myers, Stu Lee, and those are just the names I could include on the promo card. Go to That's the amazing. Website. NYCBM.com. No, we have not changed the URL since we were in New York Comic Book Marketplace. We're working on that. Curse you, cyber squatters. NYCBM.com is where to go to get your tickets. And hey, Michael Valentine, didn't we give you a special discount code that's good until February 25th for all your fans?
Any comics fans are in New York or are listening to this podcast that they use the code COMIX, they get 10% off admission.
Okay.
Yeah. You go to NYCBM.com, you click on the little tab or the sign for tickets, and you select whether you want to go one day or two, Saturday or Sunday or both days, and that'll take you to Ticket Leap. After you fill out your information at the bottom, it will say enter discount code here. You hit that little caps lock button on your keyboard and type in COMIX and boom, 10% off. And tickets right now online are $35 for Saturday, $25 for Sunday, $55 for both days. We also have special tickets for if you want to get if you want to meet Stan Lee. We've got a $350 package with a whole bunch of goodies. We've got a $100-some-odd package. We have other special package deals involving certain celebrities, but you'll get 10% off of any of it before February 25th. That's just, what, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, so go- absolutely.
Well, you know, and the and one thing I wanted to say, too, is really exciting for me is, you know, screening the film there with all these amazing talent that's going to be around. But we're also doing some really cool giveaways for people who actually go to the comic screening. Mike's doing some really cool stuff for that as well, right, Captain?
That's right. Let's see. I think he got a $250 gift certificate to, which one was it? It was Mile High Comics. That's right. Mile High Comics, the famous comics warehouse out in Colorado, the legendary Mile High Comics. With $250, you can do a lot of damage to your comic convention if you.
I could put a dent there. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
and you just we're gonna do a couple of other cool things there. There may be a special guest or two at this screening.
That's right.
Also, I'm donating a couple really cool books. I've got a Hunter Killer book that Mark Waid and Mark Silvestri both signed. That I'm gonna give away at the screening. I've also got a really awesome book by Amanda Connor, the quintessential Amanda Connor book that's signed by her. She did a special signing for me that I'm going to be giving away. We're probably going to have some comics bundles, so like a DVD and a t-shirt and a movie poster. We're going to have some movie posters that might be signed by Stan and maybe some of the other talent there and maybe doing something with those. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a really cool thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, just to be clear, is the screening extra or is it included in the price of admission to the con as well?
Oh, it's
absolutely included.
Yeah, it's absolutely included. That's a thing. I mean, that's why I like the conventions because they don't charge extra for that stuff. It's part of your ticket price, you know?
Yeah, very nice. Very nice.
But it's on just so that you don't get the ticket and show up on the wrong day. It's scheduled for Sunday.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Sunday at 2 p.m.
2 p.m.? Okay. That's good.
Isn't that what we said?
I think we said 1:30 or 1:45, but.
Yeah, I'll just look it up on the website right now. But let me also tell you that the lead in for that is a Q&A and a preview of a documentary about Charlton Comics that you may have heard of. Those of you who remember those comic books that looked like they were printed in cereal box factories, because they may well have been.
I've got a few of those.
Yeah, Charlton is that other company that just kept on plugging away with science fiction, superheroes, and war comics, and westerns, and ghost stories. That you'd see there'd be your Marvels, there'd be your DCs, there'd be your Archies, and there was this like other company called Charlton, and that was them, and they plugged away right through the mid '80s, and lots of artists and writers got their start there, like Dick Giordano and John Byrne and Steve Ditko did a lot of work for them, and they did a lot of licensed, like John Byrne's first work was Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch. They did Space 1999. They did Emergency, that TV show about firehouse paramedics. And their part of comic book history is in danger of being completely forgotten, you know? So it was very important. And since it's relevant to comics, beyond the comic book pages, I decided it would be an ideal lead-in to have some of the guys who were involved in Charlton Comics, as well as the people putting together this documentary, to have their little Q&A right before Comics the Movie. And after Comics the Movie, Michael and some special guests will have a little Q&A. And immediately following that, Captain Zorik's Costume Contest.
Wow.
Where the audience comes first.
Your Sunday is planned out all right there.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, you guys talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to look up the schedule.
That's pretty awesome. I definitely encourage everybody to check it out. And we'll have the links to the con itself, as well as, of course, the documentary in our show notes, just so people can check it out.
But I definitely encourage people to go, especially if you're in the New York area. It again is March 11th and 12th. Michael, this is pretty exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. And if people need any information, they can also, go on my website. I'll have information there, www.comicsthemovie.com, comixthemovie.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you and the captain coming on. Do we have a time yet for that?
Let me just give you the whole Sunday schedule for the Globetrotter Room, just because it's pretty cool. At 11 o'clock, Pronto Comics is hosting a thing called Phrases to Pages. It's kind of like an artist and writer mixer where they're going to give you a phrase and you got a couple of hours to draw a page of comics about it. And they're going to have they're going to like judge them and give out prizes later in the afternoon. Following that, Jason David Frank, the original Green Ranger, is going to have a little Q&A session there. We got that scheduled down. Then at 1 p.m., the Charlton Comics Q&A. And at 1:30, we're going to start showing comics, the movie screening. And then immediately following that, like I said, the Q&A from you guys. And at 4 p.m., The costume contest takes the stage. You notice I don't call it cosplay. I'm just old school like that. But
for those who are
For those who are into cosplay, there'll be plenty of that going on all weekend long. Even those people who like judged costume contests will have their opportunities. We got workshops. We got comic book Shark Tank, which will be exactly what it sounds like. I'll be hosting a talk with Roy Thomas and Jackson Bostwick about the many Captain Marvels. We got Joe Simon's son, Jim Simon, going to be talking about Jack Kirby and the creation of Captain America. There's just more than I can talk about. So
no, absolutely. I mean, this is just, I'm looking at the website now. It's just scratching the surface. So obviously we want to get people there. Check it out. Go to the website, check out the schedule for yourself. If you can't find something that you want to do here, then I don't think you're really a comics fan. So, And definitely, we encourage people to support Michael and go out and see that screening on Sunday. So thanks, guys. We appreciate you guys coming back on the station and look forward to it. Good luck with the show and good luck with the convention.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
All right, rock on.
And now here's some shows where you can find ESO personnel at. Starting this month, February 24th through the 26th, it's Mysticon in Roanoke, Virginia. The Geek Girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be attending that show. And then March 3rd through the 5th is MarsCon. That is in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Flopcast's Cornflake will be there. And yes, she will be spearheading some, is it dementia water aerobics? Yes,
dementia water aerobics is Cornflake at her best.
I always have to say it with a question mark because I can't quite believe those three words go together, but yet Cornflake makes it happen. So, the other half of the Flopcast, Kevin, will be at the Northeast Comic Con March 4th through the 5th that weekend. That's in Hanover, Mass. So, so check out the Flopcast. They'll be in two different areas of the country. So you can find one of them. Of course, I'm sure Kevin won't blame you at all if you're leaning more towards the water aerobics. But if you happen to be on the northeast side of town, side of the country, then check out the Northeast Comic Con. At least that show is put on by some pretty good people, and they're going to have the dynamic duo there as well. So March 10th through the 11th, I'm sorry, 10th through the 12th. Is Joe Lanta. And as you heard us talk about with Martin in last week's show, this is going to be, it's a fun event. It's a toy collectibles extravaganza. It's more than just G.I. Joe's, although G.I. Joe's are represented better than almost any other show in the country. And but it talks about all kinds of toys with pop culture. We are going to be doing ESO is going to be hosting a panel on Mego. Mego figures for over the years, one of the, I think, the biggest lines of toys and 8-inch figures, certainly in the 70s. So we are happy to do that. They're seeing a little bit of a revival now, too, which is really cool. So that is March 10th, 11th, and 12th. March 18th and 19th is the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo in Huntsville, Alabama. Our sometimes co-host Lacey will be attending that event. So please reach out to her and tell her what a great job she's doing, because we love having her on. So if we're only scheduled to have her on, I think, twice more, but who knows? It could be a regular thing. So reach out to Lacey there in Huntsville and tell her that you love her. March 24th through the 26th is Regeneration Who. That is in Baltimore, Maryland. It is a Doctor Who themed convention, and Angela Pritchett will be there as well. March 25th through the 26th, same weekend, is the South Carolina Comic-Con in Greensville, South Carolina. Mike and I will be there. It's one of our favorite shows to do. We had Robert on a few weeks ago to talk all about it. Like I said, it's one of our favorite shows. It is a comic-focused show. Sure, there are some other pop culture guests as well, but it really focuses on comics, and it is a very family-friendly atmosphere. So come on out and say howdy. It's a great show, one of the best shows of the year.
Try to say that 10 times fast, folks.
Not doing it. April 28th through the 29th is Treklanta in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike and I will be there as well. We are happy to return to Treklanta. And on Saturday, we will be hosting a panel, What I Learned from Star Trek. It's going to be a fun panel where we hope to get everybody involved to tell us about exactly what Star Trek over the years, its 50 some years, has taught you guys, has taught us all, really, as a society. April 28th through the 30th is RavenCon. That is in Williamsburg, Virginia. Angela Pritchett will be attending that show. And then at the beginning of May, it's Wholanta, their newly christened new dates. It's basically the time gate, but it's rechristened to Wholanta, and it's got a new date. May 5th through the 7th is the new dates instead of Memorial Day weekend. But you know what? Sooner is better, because this show, we always look forward to it. They've got some great guests lined up, and we are happy to participate. Where we'll tell you more information about exactly how we'll be participating, what panels we'll be doing, and whatnot in the future. So listen to us later to talk about that. And if you've got a show or some events that you want to promote, just like we did earlier in this segment, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions.
All right, so that's going to wrap up another episode of the Air Station One podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here, talking all about science. And, of course, Dr. Geek, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's an absolute honor to be here, as always.
Scott, how can people find you?
Oh, you can find us on the web at drgeeklab.com, on facebook.com/drgeeklab, or the Dr. Geek Think Tank on Facebook, and on iTunes and on ESO Network.
Woohoo! Thank you so much, my friend. As always, you guys are doing a killer job on the podcast, and we've gotten some great feedback about our first science episode. That's why we brought you back.
Fantastic.
All right, Lucas, you made it through another one, my friend.
Yes, I did, and it was just as fun as the last time. I appreciate you allowing us to come on board, Mike. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, dude, you guys are always welcome. But let me rephrase that. You guys are welcome when we invite you, because you guys will just take over with your science stuff.
Yeah, you got to watch us. We might do upgrades that you didn't sign off on.
Right. Yeah,
it's kind of scary having them on the station, because they actually know what all these like gears and buttons do. We don't have any clue.
We just think they're cool to, light up the office work.
You might see Andromeda a lot faster.
Exactly. We found the station. It's not a big deal. This was all here when we found the place, as we like to say. And, I think it'll just become ESO still, but it'll be Earth Science One instead.
Yeah, well.
Oh, stop it. Don't even go there, guys.
Okay. For you, I won't.
Thank you. Mr. Mike, thank you so much as always.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about tonight, sir?
I do. I want to shout out to our good friends, the Possum Kingdom Ramblers, Ricky and Bambi, fresh off their tour of the UK and Jazz, as well as some other members. They have finished their second CD album, and it's going to be released on the 18th of March. It is called Heroes in a Trash Can. New songs, special guests. I've heard a few of their songs. They've been playing them live at their gigs, and if you like their first album, you're going to love this one. I'm so happy for them. They've been around for almost 3 years now, which is hard for me to believe. And this is their second album, and I can't wait to hear the whole thing. So, yeah, that is going to drop on March 18th. You can find out more information about that, as well as all things Possum Kingdom Ramblers by going to their site or their Facebook page. I'll post a link on the show notes.
They just had a great tour of the UK, actually, even.
They did. Yeah, it wasn't the Possum King of Ramblers. It was Ricky and Bambi at Radio Cult.
That's true.
And Pure Ed. But yeah, they rocked London.
They did. They felt the power of the cat. I'm going to do a quick shout out to one of our own podcasts, actually. I'm really sad to say that the Adam and JP show is no more on the ESO network. We dumped them. We got rid of the guys. And instead, in their place, we have Podcasterole. They've actually rebranded themselves and come back as a brand new show. Still the same numbering with episodes, still the same feed, but Adam and JP are now Podcasterole.
They're now cooking hosts.
Exactly. They're doing cooking talk all the time.
No, they're still going to be cooking up a great discussion of pop culture topics.
Exactly. And we'll have JP on the show very soon to talk all about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're great guys. And the rebranding thing is pretty exciting. So we are glad to help them. And we're welcoming a new show with old friends.
Exactly. So it's what is new is old again. I mean, old is new or new is old. Whatever.
Yeah, we're just old.
Well, yeah, we are. But
Hey, nobody's supposed to know that, guys.
We're supposed to be young and hip. That's right.
Hell, that's right.
Hell, if Bill Nye the Science Guy could be hip and new, what does that do for us? We could be really hip and new.
Hey, age is just another number, guys. Age is just a number. Remember that.
It is. It just gets higher and higher each year.
It does.
Of course, yeah. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon store. Please help support the station. That's how we do the show, because of you guys out there buying stuff. All you have to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESO Amazon. We make it that easy for you to do. Bookmark it. Doesn't cost you anything extra. Doesn't even take any extra time. And you can shop to your heart's delight. And when you do that, you help bring air to the station. You help bring Dr. Scott a new microscope. It's actually, it's really fun stuff. And you know what? We're going to get Lucas in orbit sometime. Promise you on that one. So yes,
beam me up.
Exactly. So with that being said, we want to hear from you. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. Or of course you could call us at 404-963-9057. Join us here next week. We're going to have a very special episode of ESO. You know, of course, all episodes of Earth Station 1 are special, but, you know, that's short school bus type. But this is a really special episode. We're going to be talking about ESO geek confessions. Confessions of, you know, what is your geek dark secret? You know, I think it'll actually be a lot of fun. We have a few friends rejoining us that we haven't heard from in a long time. That alone is a geek confession. So it's always going to be fun.
Going to need to get out the guitar twang.
Exactly. So it should be a lot of fun. We'll see you then next week. My name is Mike Faber, and it's been my pleasure to talk to you all. We'll talk to you soon. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.